This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, how our chronic underinvestment in healthcare needs to change.
First, we look at our existing healthcare system and what reforms we need. And then the health minister has spoken about wanting to future-proof these healthcare reforms. So we talk about why that's important and what it'll take to get it done.
Tell us, what improvements would you like to see in our healthcare? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07, and today's Inside Story has its roots in, a quote really by the health minister in Parliament, where he, Khairi Jamaluddin, basically acknowledged a chronic underinvestment in the public healthcare system. And he said that Malaysia's public healthcare expenditure is low, 2.58% of our GDP, and that other middle income countries spend at least 4% of their GDP on their public healthcare.
So this is not the first time this has been said or even acknowledged, but I think that one of the few silver linings, I suppose, from the pandemic has been a true acknowledgement, an actual realization of how important it is to invest in our healthcare and not to suddenly be at the behest of a pandemic and think, oh no, I guess we're not ready. And so if we look at how this manifests, right, Khairi said that the AG's report from 2018 showed weaknesses in the emergency and trauma department, staff shortage due to high patient load, the lack of funds, inadequate equipment that led to poorer healthcare services, and all of which is going to culminate in hopefully a white paper on the national healthcare system, which is expected to be tabled in Parliament in November. So the white paper aims to actually outline the current status, gaps and constraints that are faced in the national healthcare system. And that was actually one of the things that was discussed in Dewan Rakyat today.
Yes, and if you just look at some of the broad strokes of what that white paper is expected to encompass, it includes things like proposed solutions in terms of service delivery reform, financing, governance, and organization, governance and organization over a period of 15 years. So a pretty forward-looking plan. And it will also include the results and recommendations from various healthcare system studies that had been done previously. And I think this one's pretty important as well, stakeholders' views through engagement sessions. Now, worth saying that these are all just outlines. We're not quite sure yet what the paper will specifically include. But one aspect which we are going to be looking at today, Khairi said that that white paper would be future-proof, meaning that the proposals could still be implemented, whether it's a change of government, and basically it's a forward-looking vision of what our healthcare reform should look like.
So I think the future-proof part is extremely important to say, and it's why we wanted to dedicate an entire segment of our show to examining it, because it's an acknowledgement. I'm using that word a lot, but I feel like sometimes we don't acknowledge. And I think that it's an acknowledgement that when it comes to long-term reforms, as a lot of these large reforms tend to be, right, you cannot change things within a year or two. It's going to take a long time. When it is like that, and you aren't necessarily sure that you're going to be the person seeing it all the way through, that's when you need to know that, look, we're doing this for the people. It's going to be in place, whether I am minister or not, whether my party is actually the one in cabinet, so on and so forth. It is actually going to be there. But then, of course, the flip side of that is, if you're going to put something like that in place, it itself has to be future-proof in the sense that it actually encapsulates what it is that the country is going to need in that period of time. And that's where all these different things come in, right? The consultation, the research, and also why we wanted to hear it from you. Because if it's something that's going to be put in place in November, now is really the time to be talking and thinking about what it is that we want to see.
Yes. So send your thoughts our way. What improvements would you like to see in our healthcare? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Prof. Dr. Sharifa Ezad Wanpute, Professor in Health Economics, Hospital and Health Management from UKM. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:13. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're discussing the underfunding of our public healthcare system. This is coming on the wake of a statement from the health minister. And so we thought we'd first look at the current lay of the land and what the gaps are. Do send your thoughts our way. What sorts of improvements would you like to see in our healthcare? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Prof. Dr. Sharifa Ezad Wanpute, Professor in Health Economics, Hospital and Health Management from the Faculty of Medicine at University Kebangsaan, Malaysia. Prof, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for having me.
So in Parliament today, Health Minister said that there is a chronic underinvestment in the public healthcare system. What did you make of the statement?
Thank you very much. That is actually, for my personal opinion, this is a very true statement. We have been, when we say we, means the public healthcare system has been chronically underfunded. Most of the countries would advise that you actually approach a percentage from your GDP around maybe 7%. That may be quite achievable for certain countries who are really high income. But we understand that Malaysia, coming from a middle, upper middle income country status, the GDP is probably not achievable of 7%. And if you compare, let's say, with some OECD countries, on average, their percentage of GDP devoted to health is about 10%. So we spent about 4+, and that is a combination of both public and also private healthcare system. So in a way, it is considered underfunded, and we need to increase that, specifically during the COVID pandemic and also when we approach the endemic system later on. This is because our burden of not only communicable disease due to COVID, but also we have a double burden. That means that we are also having a huge amount of problems with non-communicable disease as well. And I think this has been many times tabulated in the news and so forth. We have a high number of people having diabetes, hypertension, stroke, heart problems, and so on. So we need to tackle this in a holistic manner.
So overall, how efficient is healthcare in Malaysia, and what elements of our system are working well, which others need improvement?
Right. So if we talk about healthcare in Malaysia, we can specify according to two systems. One would be the private healthcare system. Another one would be the public healthcare system. Most of the private healthcare system is considered quite good. But also our public healthcare system, and this is where we need to actually help our public healthcare system. And if we talk about public healthcare system, again, we can actually divide this into two parts. One would be the primary care system. Another one would be the hospital where the patients are being admitted. And this is where most of the patients, covered by the government or basically publicly funded through the tax-based system, goes and get their healthcare, which is the public healthcare system. The primary care, which is almost everywhere in the country now, this is very well set up by Malaysia since our independence days as well. And our primary care system in Malaysia is quite strong. However, it can be improved because we have a lot of problems nowadays. We have a lot of issues of non-communicable disease, but also issues on mental health, cancer, and the issues of lifestyle diseases that needs to be tackled.
You've mentioned a couple of the challenges there, but specifically, what are some of the ways in which you've seen this underinvestment of funds showing up in our healthcare system?
Right. If you talk about, let's say, drug funding as well. So the drug funding in Malaysia, most of the drugs come to a government purchase, and this need some improvement as well. Because example would be oncology drugs. Oncology drugs, they are very expensive, Sharmila, and we need to purchase this because a huge number of our patients are actually having cancer. They need to have this treatment as well. and also some of the patients who are coming in with mental health diseases. Now, mental health issues are not easily recognizable. We know you don't come and see the patient as having a mental health illness. We need to screen them. The primary care is the strongest force in our healthcare system. They need to be told, they need to be taught, they need to be mentioned about how to tackle the mental health system in Malaysia. They need to know how to screen, but also tackle it. Now, this needs a huge investment. This cannot be done by any Tom, Dick and Harry. We need a proper team. And this has to go on continuously, because at this point in time, our mental health issues in Malaysia is burgeoning. And this is one of the problems in our non-communicable disease as well. So if you talk about cancer, you talk about mental health, you talk about all these, we call this the tiga serangkai, or basically they are very related to each other, diabetes, hypertension, and also heart problems. So all of these, they come to the clinic with a lot of issues, and some of these may have issues on continuation of care. So this needs to be improved as well.
So the minister has said, right, that some of the issues include a lack of staff, overcrowding, insufficient funds and equipment at the emergency and trauma departments. What impact do these issues have on patient care?
You saw this specifically when we handled the pandemic that day. There was a huge setback that we had when there was, patients were falling from the sky. The third wave and the second wave was a huge amount of example where we see a huge number of influx of patients, not only coming to the emergency and trauma departments, but they had to be managed at the primary care as well. So if you look at the staff as well, we mentioned this, I think, repeatedly in some of our other sessions, where we have a chronic lack of staff. Most of our staff who are trained and who are seniors, Sharmila, most of them would leave into the private sector. And when this brain drain basically occurs, we are left with the young staff, but also they are also inexperienced and they are not trained to become specialists in specific areas. So these are where we lack staffing, not only by numbers. We also lack not only the doctors and the specialists, but also the nurses who are trained. And this is where we need to step up and basically help our staff, gather more staff. We have the issues of pandemic now. We have a chronic underfunding of staff as well. So when we talk about staffing and also the placement of people, we see that most of them will flock into the primary care centres and also the public hospitals, especially when there's an economic breakdown, as what we are having now. When inflation comes up, when there's going to be an economic breakdown, most of the patients or basically the population will flock not only to the public, but some of them would go to certain GPs and things like that. Now, this is very much important for especially the B40 population, but also a bit of the M40. Of course, the T20 are basically covered, but most of the B40 and the M40, they don't have saving, that's one. And most of them do not have any private health insurance. So they're very much dependent on the social protection that's provided by the government at this point in time. Most of them would have Perker B40 or My Salam or something like that. And they need to know that these are the, some sort of coverage that are able to cater for some of their chronic non-communicable disease problem. We see that most of them would have at least one or two non-communicable disease. So you can imagine not only you being elderly, you don't have enough funds, but you are also imposed with, diabetics, but also hypertension and things like that. So this is where, the staffing needs to be improved, but we also need to make sure that they are chronically funded and also they are the continuation of care is provided at all levels for this population.
Now, how do we compare in this regard to other countries in terms of investment in our healthcare?
Right. If you look at other countries, it depends what status of the country itself. Most of the countries that if you look at, let's say, Asia-Pacific and Asian region, most of these countries are upper middle income, middle income. And if you compare this, some of the status would see that, they would give like examples. Singapore would be one of the highest ranking in healthcare. But if you compare with some other countries as well, Malaysia actually makes a good position. We'll give you a few examples, Sharmila, things like indicators. We look at mortality rate, infant mortality rate, maternal mortality rate, and also the longevity of the population, how long a male or a female population basically live. Now, these indicators are actually quite good, but we need not be complacent. This might not last forever. We need to make sure that this continues so that we improve all the indicators that we have in healthcare. So if you look at some of the ratios that we have now, example, in COVID, the number of vaccinations and the number of people getting boosted and so forth, these are all indicators which shows that we have come in strength and we are doing a good job. But there are other areas that we need to improve. And we have mentioned things like staffing and specific areas of NCDs, non-communicable disease, things like equipment and so forth. These are, if you look at equipment in certain hospitals, some of these equipments are actually very long-standing. They have been there for decades sometimes, you know, and this is where, you know, we might actually need to improve our funding so that we can access better equipment, but also modern technologies. We need to make sure that we don't actually, jeopardize the private. The private will have better healthcare system. Now, if there are a way or mechanism or some sort of national health insurance that the patient can actually access equipment in the private healthcare, but some sort of funding by the insurance, now, this is something that we need to work on. So this is something that we look forward in the future as what other countries have done.
So the white paper that is expected to be tabled in Parliament in November is aiming for the reformation of the country's health system. What do we know so far about it and what it involves?
I have no clue on what is new, but I would expect that, you know, we are going to access more disciplined budget. But also, I think that we are going to look into a better system, digitalization, some sort of insurance for the population. Now, a lot of countries have moved into the national or social insurance, and this is something that we need to move on as well, and we need to know where to start. Of course, it involves a lot of people. The idea has been mooted for a long time, actually, Shamila. This is not something which is relatively new. There are many countries who have started, a bit backward than us, but they have come in a force, such as Thailand, but also Indonesia. They have come into their own scheme, national insurance system for their own countries, and they have improved their healthcare in such a way that, you know, we should be able to do something about it as well in Malaysia.
Now, what would you like to see happen as we move forward with this?
I think the budget needs to be improved to the healthcare system, specifically for the public healthcare system. The primary care system needs to be improved. Most of the budget will go into the hospital. I'm not saying that this is wrong, but I do think that the primary care system needs to be improved. This is where the majority of the work also are being done for screening, for prevention of chronic diseases. And this is the primary care needs to be improved as well. So this includes our healthcare clinic, the clinic kesihatan and things like that. The GPs are mostly are in the private system. So this is something which, of course, they have their own funding and they have their own ways to capitalize patients' care. But the public healthcare system, the primary care needs to be improved. You know, the ratio that we have now system, basically the public health, these are basically underfunded. There's a whole bunch of equipment that needs to be improved and needs to be assessed, and we need to upgrade this primary care system. So I think the focus will be primary care system in the future.
Prof. Sharifah, thanks for speaking with us today.
Welcome.
That was Prof. Dr. Sharifah Izzat Wan Putih, Professor in Health Economics, Hospital and Health Management at Universiti Kebangsaan Malaysia, weighing in on the current state of our healthcare, the gaps that need to be addressed in terms of investment and funding. We'd like to hear from you. What improvements would you like to see in our healthcare? You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. I think we have some time for some messages on this side of things.
We have messages coming in that are philosophical and also prosaic. So I wanted to start with some of the more prosaic ones. Both Nishakaran and Mew are saying the same thing. A shorter waiting time to see government doctors and get my meds from the pharmacy. Mew is also saying waiting time.
And waiting time is a sort of very real symptom of a larger problem, right? Because understaffing, lack of facilities, not having enough staff to manage what needs to happen along the way. And so I think that it's interesting when these sorts of quote-unquote prosaic things come up, because they may not seem like they're such a big deal, but in fact they are.
No, they absolutely are. And also because, I mean, I say prosaic, but it's really important. There is the knowledge sometimes that if I am waiting to see a doctor, whether for myself or someone else, mind you, if I'm just a caregiver who's coming along in order to bring somebody to the doctor, it's a work day. It's half a work day. You know, it's all these different things. And so it is absolutely hugely important. And like you said, speaks to so many other issues that are entering the fray.
We have Cheryl actually pointing out a similar issue, saying, I want the number of Dr. Parker can be produced adequately to cover the shortfall of Dr. Parker who are in service now.
So important. And again, something that has been talked about quite a bit. And when we talk about consultants, right, there's also the question of where it is that we're talking about. So when we talk about the shortfall, where? In some parts of the country, it's even more so.
Keep those thoughts coming. What improvements would you like to see to our healthcare? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be taking a look forward and talk about future-proofing those reforms. And for that, we'll be joined by Dr. Lee Boon Chai, MP for Gopeng, as well as former Deputy Minister of Health. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Fulfilling Manifesto, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about underinvestment in our healthcare and the kind of reforms we need to make to address that. Very shortly, we'll be looking at the notion of future-proofing those reforms. And for that, we'll be joined by Dr. Lee Boon Chai, former Deputy Minister of Health. But before we do, we are going to be looking at some messages. We're getting so many good thoughts. Do keep them coming. What improvements would you like to see to our healthcare system? You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and here are some thoughts.
Let's start with Madiha, who says perhaps having a Centre for Sustainable Healthcare similar to what's been developed in the UK and Nordic countries could be a great starting point, looking into the ways to incorporate greener healthcare practices and equipment, sustainable human resource management, the handling of medical waste, and many more sustainability-related issues would be extremely beneficial in order to ensure our healthcare system and resources can meet the needs of future generations. Public clinics, as well as other basic public amenities like roads and schools, must always be included in the planning and development of new townships. Otherwise, inequitable access to our so-called universal healthcare will always be an issue. A focus on preventive and not just curative care is essential. I have so many things I wish to see. A culture shift is necessary within MOH as well, where there must be a growth mindset and more of an emphasis on patient-focused care, for example, in the design of systems and infrastructure.
Madiha, there's so much there that I dearly hope will be addressed in that white paper that we have coming up. I just wanted to pick on that one issue of the one point about sustainability, because it's often so easy to have these conversations about green practices and sustainability in silos. What does the environment have to do with healthcare? But I think the truth is that as we move forward, these are conversations that need to be had together.
Yes, and also the other part of it is that sustainability is often associated with future-looking, a future-looking approach. But the other side of it is it's also associated with higher costs. And so I think as we think about increasing our budget, increasing our healthcare allocation, that is certainly a part of it, right? Considering where it is that we're actually going to be allocating that money and how long or how far ahead we're actually planning, because this is exactly what future-proofing means beyond the political realm. So we have other messages as well that have come in. Let's see, Shafiq says, bring in the tradition of music therapy to our public hospitals and ambience enhancement in hospitals, well-designed gardens to revive spirits. It's good for both doctors and patients.
I love that idea. I think these sorts of adjacent therapies are something that we haven't yet seen a lot, especially in public healthcare. And I would really like to see, and not just music therapy, but even this notion of spaces that are comfortable, that are welcoming, as opposed to healthcare and medicine being viewed as something that is often something to be avoided at all costs, really.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we're going to start talking about music therapy, there are so many other things that we can bring in. But I love the idea of green spaces. I think that hospitals, for better or for worse, are often associated with a certain sort of look and feel. While people are born, but people are also ill for a very long time in hospitals. And I think thinking about the ways in which the whole space could feel different and be more welcoming is hugely important.
Keep those thoughts coming. What improvements would you like to see to our healthcare? You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now we're going to be looking at one particular aspect that our health minister talked about, this notion of future-proofing the reforms that we put in place. And for that, we're joined by Dr. Lee Boon Chai, MP for Gopeng, as well as former Deputy Minister of Health. Dr. Lee, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for getting me online.
So firstly, what do you hope to see from this upcoming white paper? What would you like to see prioritized?
I think there are a few things. First of all, I just hope that the white paper is not recooking of the old menu, which has been mooted many ministers before this. Each time when there is a new minister, there is always talk about new policy, but actually it's a continuum of the existing policy. So I do hope that if there's a future-proof healthcare policy, they should solve a few problems. One is decide the source of funding, where the money is coming from, either from general taxation or from other places. And number two, there is a need for increased expenses in the public health sector. So I think, first of all, it's a source of funding, whether it's from general taxation or from alternative source of funding. Number two, there is a need for increased expenses in the Ministry of Health to strengthen the public healthcare sector. And number three, there is also a need to increase efficiency of the administration of healthcare delivery system in the Ministry of Health. Thank you.
So what do you think have been some of the main learnings as we emerge from the pandemic?
I think there are plus points and some negative points. I think the plus points, of course, we do know that there are lots of committed staff, doctors, nurses, and so on in the Ministry of Health who had fought the pandemic day in, day out, without much of a complaint. And number two, we also realized that since the pandemic, the preventive care or the primary care sector somehow is short. We are short of staff in terms of contact tracing and doing all the preventive care. And number three, we actually jumpstart some digitalization, like MySejahtera application, even though far from satisfactory, but it is a good start. But the unfortunate thing is, I think Ministry of Health, same as the government machinery, they all looks like looking at post-pandemic, going back to 2019 way of doing things all over. So I think this we might have missed the opportunity to kickstart digitalization, not just in healthcare, but also the government machinery.
Now, this is something that gets brought up very often. We know that Malaysia is going to be a super-aged country by 2056. What measures do we need to have in place to prepare for that?
Now, first of all, of course, when aging population, there is increased demand for healthcare, especially in terms of non-communicable diseases like cardiovascular diseases, stroke, cancer, psychiatric illness. And there's also a need to strengthen our aged care facilities, looking after the aged, the geriatric patients. There is also a need to strengthen ambulatory care so that the care is brought to home rather than bringing the patient to the hospital or to the institution. So these are areas where I think there's a need to strengthen in order for us to face the aging population challenge.
So one of one big focus that we wanted to look at, right, because the health minister has talked about the needs for these reforms to be future-proof. So what kind of safeguards would need to be in place to ensure that that can actually happen?
I think we need not have to look very far for a good example. One example is actually Singapore. I think one way you could look at is a source of funding, as I said. Number two, you could look at healthcare delivery, both private sector and also a vibrant private sector. So at the end of the day, the healthcare delivery has to be affordable so that in order to be affordable, it got to be some sort of keeper to prevent cost overrun. And in order to be affordable, a strong public sector is important to contain the cost. And it also has to be accessible so that nobody is left behind, either the marginalized group or those people who are in the remotest area of the country. So in that sense, public sector is also crucial, anchored the healthcare system. We also need to have quality healthcare. And in order to have, so that we can retain our talent. Otherwise, our patients will probably all hope to Singapore or Australia or UK or US for treatment. So it got to be affordable, accessible, and quality care. And one of the big decisions which needs to be made is source of funding.
Why is it so important for healthcare policy in particular to be future-proof?
Well, I think one of the problems is escalating cost. I think healthcare is one of the sectors where is double-digit inflation. It's not just the inflation itself in terms of cost of drugs, new treatment, but also because of aging population and also increased expectation of the population. So the healthcare expenses is always growing at double digit. So if you don't have a sustainable financing model, then at some point in time, either you sacrifice the quality or the government went broke because of trying to provide the healthcare. So in order for it to be future-proof, you've got to make sure that it is affordable, accessible, and quality, and with a source of funding sorted out.
The minister today referenced bipartisan support. What are some of the challenges that might keep the ministry from being able to push through these reforms in the long term?
Now, I think number one is financing. What sort of financing model? Who is to wear the burden? If you look at the total health expenses at the moment, is about 5% of the GDP, about 51-52% from public sector, and the rest from private sector. And a large proportion of the private sector are out-of-pocket payment, which is undesirable. So where the money is coming from? I think I personally still favor the current general taxation model. I think overseas they have tried national health insurance and so on, a single payer, single supplier system, which also has problem itself. So I still favor a general taxation model, but a strong public sector is crucial. So that's one financing. That means it will mean that the government should be committed to higher expenses allocated for Ministry of Health. So the other problem is bureaucracy. How do you sort out the bureaucracy? We cannot dump the whole Ministry of Health under the current civil service bureaucracy. Because you can see that they cannot make necessary adjustment, they cannot make necessary changes, which is future-proof, especially in terms of staffing. So take one example. You know, the minister had said earlier that they want to increase 10,000 personnel in the Ministry of Health. Fortunately, it was approved. But the process of approval will need easily 3 to 5 years before it can be implemented, because you need a cabinet paper, Ministry of Health study, cabinet paper, cabinet approved, then need the finance ministry to approve. Then after that, you go to JPA, and JPA got to come up with interview the potential candidate and recruitment. So if you are facing with the, say, COVID pandemic, by the time you recruit the 10,000 personnel, the pandemic is over. So it becomes the existing bureaucracy is not conducive for facing a crisis like the COVID pandemic.
When looking to make changes within our healthcare, what kind of consultation should the government be doing and who should they be consulting with?
Well, I think the most important thing, by now we know that healthcare involves everybody. So certainly, I think everyone should be consulted. But I think most important in this case, of course, are those who are directly involved in the healthcare sectors, both the public and the private sector. And there are many NGOs who are involved in public healthcare policy, NGO who deals with, say, HIV, deals with orang asli special group, deals with even foreign workers. So all the NGOs, all the necessary NGO, and all the those who are in the healthcare industry should be consulted. But as a basic principle, healthcare involves everyone. No one is exempted. From the time you are born until the time you enter the grave, not a single moment you can be exempted from the need for healthcare.
Dr. Lee, any final thoughts you want to leave us with?
Well, I think a future-proof healthcare is always a challenge. Many ministers have failed. I still remember One Care was promoted when Liao Tonglai was a minister and was quickly thrown out. And I do hope that the current minister could push through something which is for the good of the nation. I think we need not have to look very far. I think one of the good models we can look at is the Singapore model. Look at affordable care under Singapore system. Thank you.
Dr. Lee, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Lee Boon Chye, MP for Gopeng and former Deputy Health Minister, speaking to us on this notion of future-proofing our healthcare reforms. We'd like to hear from you. What improvements would you like to see in our healthcare? Call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and we have these messages.
So I wanted to read this pair that are related to one another. So Shamil says, back in my previous job, I had the opportunity to see the workflow of hospitals in Japan, Thailand, and Brunei. I realized there is a problem with our registration, partly because of an archaic system, partly because of patients not coming according to their stated appointment time. Some who have appointments at 11 still come at 8, thus causing congestion and long waiting time. Is there a way to fix this? There is. I am this close to writing a lengthy email to KKM, but I don't think anyone would read it. What I wish to see is a better hospital information system where the waiting time problem can be fixed. We also have Madiha, who's back to add on to her earlier point, saying patient empowerment so they can take more accountability of their health, general health education in schools, and introduction on how to navigate the public health system so that non-emergency cases don't burden the hospital emergency department, for example. And this is the point that relates to Shamil. Not just digitalization, but also centralization of patient data so that patients who are seen in different facilities can have their records shared speedily, accurately, and efficiently within different levels of healthcare.
Firstly, Shamil, as Lynn was reading your message, I was waving my arms in the air in agreement. Never has the concept of an appointment be so trampled upon and misused as we see in the hospital and healthcare system. I do not understand how you give people an appointment and then people still wait for 3 hours. What is the point?
So this is the thing, right? Because Shamil's point was people who have appointments at 11 come early, thus causing congestion. But the thing is, the reason why that happens is because otherwise you wait even longer.
Because you have to come and take a ticket and then stand in line. And to be fair, not just in public, in private healthcare too.
Exactly. So I think that you're right. And I love the use of the word archaic, because that's what it feels like when you're actually in this space. You're like, where am I? What era is this in?
But the notion of digitalization, of centralizing records, of making things easy, not because we necessarily, not just because it helps us, but really because these are things that already exist. If we can centralize data to the extent that we can use social media across platforms and whatever, I really don't see why our healthcare systems cannot be integrated and centralized to a much larger degree than we already do. We'd like to continue hearing your thoughts. What improvements would you like to see to our healthcare? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.